But I made it up in my mind, if I ever got me a regular job, I was going to stay on that damn job as long as I lived. And I hooked up with the Seaboard Airline Railroad.
How old were you?
Not quite 16 years old yet. You can figure it out for yourself. I went to work for the Seaboard April the 6th, 1906. Fired a switch engine on Hamlet Yard. The 625. Switch engine number 625.
Well, let's go back just a little bit before then and tell me a little bit more about what it was that your parents did. Were they farmers or what?
Yeah, the farming is all they could do them days.
Was it like they were tenant farmers?
Yeah, they didn't have a damn thing.
So they moved pretty much like every crop season?
Yeah, every time it took a notion to move. Like Zeb Vance one time was sent to tell the Congress up there about the tenant farmers moving in the South. One old fellow from up in Massachusetts, he jumped up and said, "Why, isn't that a whole lot of trouble to move every year?" Old Zeb said, "No, all they have to do is piss out the fire and call it a dog."
Well, so you took a notion pretty soon that you were going to go to work, it looks like.
Indeed I did. I could hear them whistles blowing about 6 miles up there to the railroad. I could hear them damn trains running, you know, and I wanted to be on them so bad when I was a little bit of fella. I said, "I'm going to the railroad and I get big enough." I've got the two things that everybody got. I was run off for being too young, and then I was run off for being too damn old. I got it both ways. I was left there on the come here on the 5th of August, 1960, on the Southern, 5th of August. And I stayed here until I was 70 years old.
Did you ever think about any other kind of job that you might have tried to take up?
No, nothing but railroad. That's all I wanted to do. We lived at a place one time that the railroad was about a mile and a half from the house. And about halfway up that is the top of the hill, you could see the train, you know, from over there. God damn, I'd run all the way. I was up to the top of that hill, you know, to see the train go by. I love them trains. I do it yet. I lay in bed there sometimes and listen to them little old boys running them trains over there. They really can on.
Do you remember when you first went to see about getting that first job?
Oh, hell yes.
Tell me about that.
Well, I had to go to Hamlet to get the job, and I lived 18 miles from Hamlet. And I'd go up to Hoffman, and then to 14 miles over to Hamlet, I believe it's 14, something like that. Catch a train at Hoffman, go over to Hamlet. I got over to Hamlet about 6 o'clock one evening. Wasn't no train till next morning. So I went over to the hotel and went to bed. The next morning I went down to the roundhouse to see about getting a job. Mr. Frank Lewis, who was the general foreman, at Hamlet for the seaboard. One of the nicest men I ever knew. And he gave me a job. He said, boy, you look mighty little, mighty young, but I'm going to give you a job. Oh, excuse me. I'm going to give you a job. And he did. Next morning, I went out in 5 to 6:25. Stayed there until June the 1st, I believe it was. I ain't about quite clear on that, what time it was. Let's see, it couldn't have been June. Yeah, June the 1st. They come out with an order. All men working in the transportation department had to be 21 years old. Mm-hmm. That let me out. And damn, I cried like a kid. Just 4 months from then, I was over here on the Southern. Went out of here breaking on 72, the morning of August 5th, 1906. I stayed here until, excuse me, boys. I stayed here until they broke in and fired, broke in and run the train though. When did I quit? August the 1st, 1960. August the 1st, 1960.
So you worked really about 55 years then for the Southern?
Like in 54 years, like in 6 days. Short 6 days. Cuss me out of you if I'm flapping this too much. You can do it.
Let's go back just a little bit and describe what you did when you, those few months you were working on the seaboard, when you talk about firing. Give us a little more description of what all that was like. What was your job? What time did you get up in the morning? What did you have to do? How long did you work, and what did you do?
Oh, well, I had to report to the yard off at the yard every morning, up at the yard. Go to work at 7 o'clock. Fire the switch engine all day, 10 hours. I got $1.20 a day for 10 hours. Big money. Then I caught some extra work out of there on what we call backups. Light engine to run back down the track to Lumberton, all down in there in watermelons. That was watermelon country. Get a train load of watermelons, 18 or 20 loads of watermelons, and bring them out. We'd run two or three of them every night. I fired a lot of them, some of the part of the time.
Now, when you're firing, describe exactly what you're doing.
Well, all you had to do was, when you're on the road, they'd get you about 25 tons of coal on the tender. You'd take your shovel, place that coal around in the firebox and burn it. That's about as good as I can describe that to you. How about that, Hugh?
Firing an engine, it was actually an art. You just didn't throw your fire, coal in the firebox.
No,
you had to evenly distribute it. So it would have a place, that you might say, so you'll have an even fire or glow over the entire thing. You just didn't pitch it in straight and leave it. You flopped it in there and it.
No, you follow
what I'm saying?
Yes, sir.
And later on in years then, when even before my days, it came up, it had a distributor. And fire came up, a coal came up over a stoker, and you had a flapper stoker. And right up in the bottom of the firebox, it's saying flip back and forth and evenly distribute the coal. That's what Mr. Williams is trying to tell you.
He said. Now, you know, Hewlett had remarked that. He said that was an art. It was an art. And the reason I know it is an art, because I've known men that fired an engine for 25 years and never was a fireman. You've known that. Never could fire an engine and save his life. It's bound to have been an art. One of the best steam makers I ever saw was old Cecil Garvin. He could make more steam off of the toughest engine than any man I ever saw. Cecil Garvin.
Did somebody teach you, any particular person teach you how to do that?
No. I just caught it up. That's what I know it was right, because I didn't have no special training for it. And I know a lot of men that was trained and never could do it.
And how long would you work on one, at any one time?
You're referring to one trip?
The longest trip I ever was on duty was 85 hours from Monroe here.
Explain that to him. You didn't work continuously 85 hours.
Oh no, you wasn't working. You were sitting on your butt most of the time, but still you're on duty. On duty 85 hours from Monroe here.
Well, when you came over and went to work for the Southern, what was your job then?
Breaking. I went breaking here on the Southern. And I broke here. Well, 54 years, like in 6 days.
Now, when you first started, could you describe what you were doing, what the job was about, what kind of task you had to do if you were a brakeman?
I had to do what the rest of them told you to do. But you didn't know anything. Every man that's an apprentice or a brand new man, he doesn't know anything, and he has to do what other people tell him to do. He's lucky to get by at that. Cut that off, don't do it.
So, exactly what, do you remember exactly how you would have what the first kind of jobs you would have done, what was your learning to be a brakeman? What did they first have you doing?
Breaking.
Yeah.
Out here, I'd go out with the crew, you know, and ride the road, you know. Had to ride the road 30 days them days. Mm-hmm. Ride with other crews, you know, to learn what to do. And you could get some pretty good ideas, you see, in them 30 days. Would you like the hell of a lot of being a brakeman, but you make it all right somehow or another. Everybody looked out for everybody in them old days. If it had been, then none of them would ever made it. Each one looked out for the other.
Well, let's go back a bit, and you were talking about how they would send everybody out kind of for a 30-day a run to get to
so learn something. Mm-hmm,
to learn. Now, would they be paying you at this time too?
No, you didn't get a damn cent them days. You get $5 a day now. You didn't get nothing them days.
They would feed you, I guess, and
You didn't. You could eat persimmons off of the persimmon trees. They were ripe at that time of the year. Made us out of the gardens and everywhere along. Hen roost, get a hen roost or anything, you know.
Did you have any friends, other people that you knew who lived out in the country who might have come in to work for the railroad about the same time?
No, I never seen a soul here. For a couple of years after I come here, I never seen a soul that I ever knew from home before.
Where would people come from? to come to work here? Would they be coming mostly from North Carolina, Virginia, around nearby of this place?
Everywhere. We had an engineer here from Canada, two of them. We had an engineer here from Mississippi. We had brakemen here from every state in the Union. Don't you reckon you?
Yes.
Every state in the Union.
Was this back when you were starting out?
Yeah, I was just coming along then. Yeah. And you didn't know nobody's name when you went out with him. You didn't know his name. He's Bill, Bo, John, or Jake, or Sam, or something. You didn't give a damn what it was. It made his name what it could. Mm-hmm. And if he got a nickname, the first one he got after he got here, he carried that with him as long as he lived. That's all he ever did get. Yeah, it was a wonderful civilization. This body of men made up, yeah, Spencer. Coming here from all sections of the country. Some parts of the world, you know. We had them here from Scotland, England, everywhere.
Can you remember any of the nicknames that you heard a long time ago and how they got their nicknames?
Well, I'll give you one, old boy. He was pistol happy. Had to carry a pistol with him in whatever way he went. And he woke up one night, laying in the bed, you know, with his cover up on him here. Seen a man standing in the window. He reached under his head and got that 38 and bang! Damn, when he did, he knocked his big toe off. He thought that was a man's head, you know, sticking up over the window sill. And it was his big toe. They got in. And, let me see now. Hard to understand this damn stuff after so many years, isn't it?
Just take your time.
Yeah. Boy, I went to get a job up in the train master's office one day, upstairs in some terminal, depot. And, he leaned up against the wall. The janitor come along and saw him there. He says, "What's your name?" He says, "Brown." "Well, brace up, Mr. Brown." He says, "The train might move high if you see you standing there like that. But brace up, Mr. Brown." Well, all he ever got was Brace Up Brown. That was his nickname as long as he lived, Brace Up Brown. Oh, God. How about Hogface Button and them?
Hog Burton.
Yeah, how'd he get his name?
Well, the engineers at them days were called Hogheads. Yeah. Engineer. And I don't know whether Mr. Burton's name came from that or not. Of course, he, as you know, he started out as a farmer and then wound up as an engineer and was local chairman for the engineers and things. But Hog Burton, I don't know whether that came from being after he got promoted to an engineer or not. He just lived up a block from me.
Well, let's leave that out.
Yeah.
Did you have a nickname, Mr. Williams?
Yeah. Yeah, hell, I had some of them.
You'll cut it if it don't work, they say.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about it.
Mm-hmm. I want to tell you, he was a hard nut at you. Tough and a gum stump. That's due to the fact he's done lived 89 years old. And he was one of the best conductors in freight and passenger mm-hmm. service that we've ever had out of Spencer. Mm-hmm. I worked with him for 30-some years. and he was a real railroader, and he was a worked with the men. He didn't low rate you. He was with you. If you made a mistake, he didn't give you heck for it. He corrected your mistakes and do better the next time, this, that, and other. He is undoubtedly, and I'm just going from what I worked with him for years, the best railroad man we ever had out of Spencer, North Carolina. And he looked out for us young men. I came here in 1939, and he was my buddy. I'm telling you, but he was a railroader, but tougher than a gum stump.
Well, thank you. Old Lacey Cook, another old conductor here, used to say that I could say something when a man got in trouble that made him feel better than anybody ever saw. One morning at Brown Summit, we had to pick up a car there. He cut the engine off, turned him back to the house, and he didn't throw the derail off. Oh, Lord, if there's anything that kills the hog head, it's a derailer. And he run over the derailer, like to turn the damn engine over. Oh, yes, he come, you know, whim, 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 whim. And of course, it scared Lacey to death. That's the term, you know. He didn't scare him too bad, but he scared him bad enough. And I said, oh, hell, I said, don't bother about throwing that derailer now when you're going in, but be sure and throw it before you start out. Because you ain't coming out if you don't throw it.
That was what a derailer was for. Cars parked in these sidings adjacent to the main line was to be sure that car didn't get loose and run out and foul the main line. It would derail it and throw it to the right, away from the main line. You could go back over them, back over them, and it might put you on the ground, but ordinarily it didn't. But coming out, that was the point of it.
Boy,
they referred to them as a derailer, and the old days was called a jackknife. So it just took, it protected the main lines, what it did.
Well, let's go back again. After you had worked your 30 days without pay, learning about the jobs,
yeah.
What did they put you to do in it?
Called me to go out of here on the morning of, I believe I went over that, I'm not sure. The morning of August 6th. Went to Monroe, breaking on the head in a freight train.
How long did it take you to get there that day?
We made a good run that day. We made the run in 12 hours. The best job, best run had been made in many days. Yeah, we run it in 12 hours. And that run, that job was talked about for a long time. Old Joe Pleasant was the conductor.
What did it pay you for that day's work?
$2.50. $5 a round trip.
When I left me and the railroad 5 years ago, that same trip would have paid me about $85 a day.
You have to think that a lot of people who are going to hear this probably won't know a lot about the way the railroads ran. And so I'd like to get you to describe a little bit about your trip. When you would make a trip, how would you sleep, where would you stay, how long would you stop over, things like that. Before we do that, where would you go, how long, how far away, how long would you stay, just all the details.
Well, let's start a trip from here to Monroe.
Okay.
In order to make a trip from Spencer to Monroe, you had to go to the roundhouse and get your engine. Mm-hmm. You're the head brakeman. go around and couple it to the train in the yard. Then go back and couple your air. You had to couple your own air when you come here, when I come here. Couple your air, cut the air back in at the engine, go over your train, stop the leaks. And if there's any bad on a car or the broken train line, you had to throw them out yourself. And nobody throw them out for you. You get the train together, you'd start out for Monroe. Single track them days. Maybe you'd get over here to Linwood and pull on the side track and stay 2 hours waiting for more trains to come south. Mm-hmm. You got them delays on like that all the way to Monroe, and sometimes you get there in 2 days and sometimes it take you 3 days. Anyhow, it's a long time, most all of them. Mm-hmm. That's about all there is to that, except that lots of times you'd have hot boxes. You'd have to stop and brass them. You brassed your own hot boxes them days. You didn't set the cars off. Nobody come out to brass them for you. You brassed them yourself. The brakeman done that. They used to tell a joke about when the flagman went to brass a car in the sidetrack. He'd load up with a bucket of dope, three or four brasses, a jack board, they call it, a jack and a jack lever, and go on up from the caboose car to the hot box. And somebody said, what did the conductor bring? And he brought along a pencil and a book. Yeah, it's a joke, you know. Mm-hmm. Pencil in the book. Everybody don't know what that is. A pencil in the book.
Mm-hmm. Now, say you had made one of these trips up to Monroe about 2 or 3 days. Would you stay over a day or two there before you came back?
Sometimes you'd stay there a week. No limit to the time you'd stay there. You'd stay there, they got ready to run you back. I have stayed there 6 days, twice, two times. And one time, what called it? Well, that was the first trip I ever made. I stayed there 6 days. The brakeman had a strike on the Washington Division. And they wanted nothing coming in under Monroe. So we had to stay there and wait till it come.
So you had to wait until the train was headed?
Wait till the cars come in before you could come out. Mm-hmm. See, that Washington Division was the other side of Monroe. Your trains come in there and we got them from there out this way. Understand? Mm-hmm.
Now what would happen to the engine that had started out here in Spencer? Would it go on to Washington, or would it turn
around? No, it turned around in Monroe and went back. They'd all assigned to different divisions.
So you would stay with the same engine?
Yeah. And generally, sometimes it would change off.
And you'd just wait until they got up enough cars and things to make
run
a load
you, yeah.
To come back?
It wouldn't run you unless you had enough train. This railroad, they tell me, has got more money than the railroad in this part of the country. And they say the management has been mighty good. I know they had a lot of hard old boys high up, you know. We had a vice president here one time in charge of operation.
What was his name?
Miller. Henry Miller. I ain't telling this for the record now, but he made a remark one time. He didn't give a damn about nobody but him and his wife and dog. And I don't think he did. I won't tell that.
Were they still laying any track around here when you started building new railroads? And
oh yeah, they were building double track. The only double track they had was from here to Yadkin River and from Pelham to Danville. All they had in this part of the country. Charlotte Division, the single track all the way to Atlanta. Up here, the single track, all except Pelham to Danville. And on the Washington Division, that was double track from Orange to Alexander.
So they were building a lot of the track, and you saw a lot of people working.
Lots of people working.
Those were pretty hard jobs, weren't they?
Indeed they were. Indeed they were hard work. But them fellas seemed to like it. It was Sunday evening. They were doing a lot of resurfacing up on the Washington Division. That is, putting ballast under the track. Had two or three crews working up there. Every Sunday evening, number 32 would have a coach on the rail for the employees that lived all the way from Columbia to Charlotte, over the Charlotte Division. He'd get on the train, he'd get right in that car. They ain't know where to go. Yeah, I couldn't do as well as I could have done, I don't reckon. I done fairly well. I got by without getting seriously hurt once or twice.
Was it pretty common to have accidents and injuries on the roads?
Oh, yeah. Oh, hell yeah. First 10 years I stayed here, they killed 10 engineers. More brakemen than you could count. Oh, yeah. Seen a many a poor devil working and next second thrown out across the track. A little he'd eat that morning, maybe scattered along across the ice. Oh, yeah, a lot of that. Engineers burn the engines, blow them up, kill themselves. Turn them over.
Why do you think there were so many people killed back then?
Well, the railroad was not up to date. It was up to date for that time, but it wouldn't be nothing for today. It didn't have the proper signal arrangements on it. Nothing of that had ever been brought up to make it safe, you know. And I don't think they had spent a couple of dollars to make it safe. They just put you out there with a damn train and tell you to go yonder.
Was it in the back of your mind at that time that you could be killed or hurt? Did you worry about that?
No, never thought about it. You can't do that. You can't work and think about getting killed. That don't go together. No, sir, death comes to you on the other side.
But you knew some people who were killed or injured back then.
Oh, I knew them. Arms cut off, legs cut off, killed, cut in two, heads cut off, tore to pieces and everything else. I knew a lot of them.
Did the people who were working on the railroads, did you all ever try to improve the conditions or get together?
Oh yeah, we had that going.
Tell me about what you did.
That was brought about by old man Coffin, who was some kind of a representative from Congress. I forget now what Coffin.
Corbin?
Coffin, C-O-F-F-I-N, Coffin. And he introduced a bill known as the Safety Appliance Bill, 1893.
submitted by the Congress that started up right then. The Interstate Commerce Commission come in there. All that come along by itself, you know. And the railroad got to be a safe place to work at after that. Before it was not safe.
Did you join one of these brotherhoods of railroad
workers?
Oh,
yeah, just as soon as I was here long enough.
How long, when did you join, or how long had you been here when you joined?
12 months. Had to be here 12 months before you joined the brotherhood them there.
And you did you join the brakemen?
Yeah. It belonged to the brakemen yet, too. Uh-huh.
What was that like? How many men would have been in... would you have regular meetings with...
Oh, yeah. Made into each lodge, you know.
Which lodge did you join?
429 here at Spencer. And we finally wound up with about 300 members. About 80 when I come in.
Now, did they work to improve the safety or conditions for the brakemen on the roads?
Oh, yeah. Legislated for it, elected men that would take care of it. You see, things are so rapid them days, we couldn't get no insurance. And we had to join up and make these organizations so as to carry insurance, you know. I carried $1,350 insurance in my organization. Lots of men that come in good for them, too. Got killed. Wives and children didn't have nothing. Come in good.
Would it help if you got injured on the road?
Oh, yes. If you lost an arm, you got $750. If you lost a leg, you got $1,000. If you lost your life, you got $1,350. And on that way.
And... with the people in the brakeman's organization, would you all, this would be your own money that you would raise the insurance? Would the railroad contribute any to that?
No, railroad company didn't like that. When we first commenced organizing, the railroads had men come around at night, spy out your house, you know. Some stranger showed up in town and called the office and asked the next day who he was and what was his mission and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, Louisa. Hidebound, all right.
They didn't like the idea of you all organizing at all.
Didn't have a bit more use for it than old what's his name down there, you know. Stevens. Mm-hmm. Stevens hates the brotherhood worse than hell does the holy one.
The Stevens?
Yeah.
Which Stevens is that?
Big merchant, you know, R.P. Stevens.
J.P.?
J.P.
The cotton textile.
Yeah, that's him.
Fighting the union.
Yeah, he fights the union with head, tooth, and nail.
And the railroads fought the unions back then, too?
Oh, yeah, all of them.
Well, how was it that you all were able to organize and win or keep your group together?
Just kept on fighting. Didn't stop for nothing. Kept on fighting. You'd beat out this legislator and go to another. Your legislative representative didn't do right for us up there. Now we'd elect another one next time. Try him out. There's been some pretty big labor leaders in the Brotherhood of Railroad Trainmen, you know, big men.
Who do you remember?
Old W.G. Lee. President, and Al Whitney, damn if I can think of the rest of them, right now to save my life.
Did you all work to get better wages on the railroad?
Better wages, more wages, better wages, and better conditions. We didn't have much of either one to start with.
Now, how would that work? If you were trying to get better conditions, would you be working and eat like the people in your particular group here would work for your own selves, or would you all work for the good of everybody on the whole system, or just how would it work?
Wasn't what kind of movement was after. Mm-hmm. The 8-hour day, all of us was after that, you know. Every one of us, machinists, boilermakers, and everything else. But whatever affected the trainmen only, why, trainmen like that. Whatever affected machinists and boilermakers and stuff like that, they have committees, you know. Each man had a committee.
Would different groups say that the people at Spencer, would they work for certain things, that the people at Monroe would work for different particular local issues or problems?
No, it didn't work that way. They worked for the machinists at Monroe. They had something that they were going up, they'd bring it out and work for it. And all the machinists probably on the Washington Division would work for that. Same way with the trainmen on the Danville Division. And the trainmen on the Charlotte Division would work for the same thing if they were after the same movement.
Were you pretty active in the union?
Yeah, I used to be president of the local lodge there. Yeah. That wasn't much, but didn't amount to much.
When was that?
1923, 24, 25, 26. 3 years.
And would you go and meet with the presidents of the other lodges in different parts of the South?
No, hardly ever. We did hell out of the correspondence. Had to be a record made of it anyhow. Write a man a letter and you got a record.
Do you remember any strikes that you all had?
Oh, yeah.
Were there?
I remember the first strike we ever had when the train was involved. St. Patrick's Day, 1913. We had a unique way of pulling the railroads out them days. We started in on the New York, New Haven, and Hartford and pulled them out and come on down. But we didn't get but one of them out. We got the NY and H&H out and the rest of them threw up their hands and surrendered. Surrendered to us.
So the ones down here in the South never did get out?
No, they didn't have to come out. Had orders not to come out.
And so you all won without?
Without having to go to that. Them boys on the NY and H&H are the only ones that struck. They struck 101%. There was a nigga hustler up there. He come out.
What did they win on that strike? Do you remember?
Well, I couldn't tell you exactly what they did win.
What would it have been about mostly back in those days?
We come up from, let's see, I wouldn't know how to say that either. We come up from about, speaking about a day of 10 hours. We come up with about over $1 on the day. Good raise. Yeah, from here to Monroe, we got 2.5 straight trip them days. And we got up to 296. That's good raise.
That was right around the time of this strike, or?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How much would you be paid during the days you were waiting to go back on a trip if you were in Monroe?
Not a damn cent. I stayed at Monroe 6 days twice. Never got a damn nickel for that.
I guess you all complained about that to the...
Oh yeah, we raised hell about that.
Now, who would you deal with if you had a complaint like that? Where'd you take it?
Vice President of Operations. The Vice President and General Manager them days, Vice President of Operations now.
Mm-hmm. And who is the one that you remember dealing with?
Old Manny H. Copeland, he was Vice President of Operations, you know, Vice President and General Manager. Later on, Henry Miller.
Coburn is the first one? What's his name, the first one you mentioned? First Vice President?
Copeman.
Copeman.
C-O-P-E-M-A-N, Copeman.
C-O, okay.
Yeah.
Now, was it ever your job as president of the local to go in and talk to one of these?
No, the committee always did that. Mm-hmm. See, we had a general committee made up of all these 23 subcommittees. The general committee, and then it went on up to the vice president in charge of the territory. The Brotherhood had a vice president in charge of, well, say, Charlotte Division and the Danville Division. And maybe the Asheville Division. The vice president in charge of that, he'd handle that. Damn good ones, too. I remember them old boys mighty well.
Can you remember any times in which people here on the Southern Divisions went out on a strike?
Oh, you mean the machinists and them, boy? Shop craft? Yeah.
Just anyone.
Yeah. September the 22nd, 1922. The shop craft all went out on a strike. Stayed out on the strike for about 3 or 4 months. Forget exactly how long they stayed out. They had to go back to work though. The same old scale. But it helped them a whole lot at that. The company found out they would strike, and it cost a hell of a lot to run the railroad without the men on it, you know. Consequently, when they went to get the next contract, it was just like that, you know. Been like that ever since. Up and up.
These were the men who were the machinists and worked in the shop?
Machinists and boilermakers. Boilermaker helpers. Blacksmith helpers. Electricians and all such men. Any shop craft over there.
Now, what did you, the brakemen and the conductors and everybody else do while that was going on? Would you support them in any way?
Yeah, we'd give them money. We couldn't. Nowadays, you can't cross the picket line. You'd stop right at that picket line now. But not so them days. You went on out, but you'd give them the money. You helped them out all you could. My grocer's bill has been more for them 3 months than my own grocer's bill was. I helped them out, and so did all the rest of the men. Them boys didn't suffer much.
So all of the different railroad unions really looked out for each other and helped each other out. Would that be true?
Oh, yeah, they did that. That's true, more or less, to this day. Yeah, they... And now the brakemen, when they was trying to do away with the firemen on the railroad, the brakemen loaned the B of RT loaned the B of LF over $1 million. I don't know why it is, but they claim the brakemen got more money than any organization in the country. They own a railroad. More than the firemen, conductors, or anybody like that.
Now you started out, you worked a few months as a fireman, and then you learned, they taught you about braking.
Yeah.
And then you became a conductor?
Mm-hmm.
And then, how long did you keep, how long were you a conductor? Or can you remember, first of all, how many years did you work as a brakeman?
12 years and 20 days.
And you did that, that was the first job you had with the Southern.
12 years and 20 days. But that only promoted me to be a conductor. And to give you an old adage on that, one time a lady asked a flagman on the train, she asked him, hey, are you a conductor? He said, yes, I'm a conductor. Why don't you do so? No, sir, I didn't tell you that I was the conductor. I said I was a conductor. Said, I'm a conductor without a train. Said, that man up yonder got a train. And me too. Had him in the train both.
How was it that you became a conductor?
By seniority, promotion. Promotion in your turn, you know, if you're qualified. If you don't qualify, you don't go. Otherwise, I'd say qualification.
So, it took about 12 years to get the seniority to become a conductor?
No, it didn't take that much, but there were so many men ahead of me, you see. This railroad, this division was always bad about hiring men, you know, they didn't need. Now, the day I come here, they run off 25 men. I said to myself, by God, I'll be a conductor in a little while to keep this up. But that is all of it. And them old boys coming out the woods, coming back, you know. Been out on the farm, you know, for years. How long ago ahead of me. They coming back, they hurt you too. Yeah, they hurt you.
They, in other words, they had some time in and they could come back.
Oh yes, the seniority never dies if he keeps it up, you see. He keeps his leave of absence up. He has to keep his leave of absence up and the seniority never dies.
So they could go, would they go sometimes and work a crop and then come back?
Oh hell yeah, work three or four crops. And only be gone 10 years and come back. Oh yeah. Train master, one of our old train masters, dropped into the caboose one morning, a little unexpected to the flagman. And he says, hey, Fred, says, I smell liquor. He says, that's nothing, says, I can taste it. How's that? Pretty good, wasn't it?
Yes.
I can taste it. 10 years worth. Leave of absence and so on.
So you were, it was part of, you were wanting to move up as much as you could, but it took a while to become a conductor.
Oh yeah, you had to come in your turn, you know. Couldn't run around nobody.
Now, how did people get to be engineers?
They all started out fine. That's the way I started, you know, on the seaboard there, the switch engine that day.
And what? How long would you have to work as a fireman before you got to be an engineer?
3 years is the maximum, I think. I mean, the minimum. 3 years. And, of course, some got by a little shorter than that, according to how bad they needed men. They used to say an old, hard tale about the firemen, you know, which it was hard, too. The fireman was all right if he had a strong back and a weak mind. A whole lot of it worked that way.